This episode is sponsored by ABI Interiors, an Australian-designed fixtures supplier specialising in high-quality kitchen and bathroom products for the modern home. ABI Interiors will turn your dream home into reality with a timeless product range that includes stylish tapware, basins, sinks, baths and showers in up to 7 signature finishes. You can visit the ABI Interior Showroom at Design Centre Chelsea Harbour or shop online at abiinteriors.co.uk.
I think the challenge and the opportunity is to think about where you are and who the client is and what the property is and the architecture and the heritage, but also bring them and their distinct personality out of them, blend it with mine basically, and try to create something that feels localized to some extent, so that you don't look at an interior of a room and think that could just be anywhere.
Welcome to a new series of House Guest with me, Carol Annett, interiors editor of Country and Townhouse magazine. My house guest this week is one of my favorite interior designers, Sophie Ashby, a truly original thinker in the world of interiors. Her new book, Home, Art, Soul, has just launched, and we sat down to chat in her studio in St. James. Interior designer Sophie Ashby is one of today's most influential tastemakers. We meet at her studio in St. James to talk about growing up in South Africa, her charity United in Design, and the release of her first book, Home, Art, Soul. Sophie, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's very, very nice to see you. The last time I saw you, you had very, very recently had a little baby girl.
Boy this time.
Boy, sorry.
the first one was a girl, the second one was a boy, and he's 7 months now. Yeah.
And I couldn't believe you were out and about doing, showing us all this beautiful apartment. And I think you said it was kind of slightly easier than being home, escaping for
absolutely.
5 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, you look wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Feeling much, much recovered 7 months later.
So you say, I wanted to do things differently, but it took me a while to define that for myself. What do you mean by that?
I'm 35, so started working as an interior designer when I was about 22. And even at all that time ago, it just seemed like a different entry into it. What I mean by that is I interview people now who are recent graduates or have just done a course or applying for a junior position, and they seem to have a sort of fully formed idea of their own personal aesthetic and taste, and they're so much better informed than I was. I think I was just, it was all very instinctive, and without Pinterest and Instagram and those things, it was a lot more analog and just sort of pulling things out of magazines, and just took me a lot longer than you might think, I think, to pull all the threads together that now run through our work and have become our defining aesthetic, if we can call it that. I think it was more organic, and I was more open to being swayed and pushed in different directions and then discovering for myself what I liked and loved.
And actually, I mean, you started the studio at 24, is that right?
25.
Yeah. I mean, incredibly young to launch yourself onto the scene. So your background, you did art history at university.
Yeah.
And then did you do any kind of, I mean, I know there's no sort of definitive interior design course, but yeah. Or was it just what you had kind of garnered as a child?
I did a 1 month course over a summer holiday at Parsons in New York. That's my only training. Yeah. So basically I'm untrained, and also you cannot call that training. It was really more just a submersion into the world of interior design could be like. It was hugely inspiring, and I kind of have longed ever since to go back to Parsons and study more there, because it was just such a great experience. But no, untrained.
But you also moved 14 times as a child. I mean, that's quite a lot.
It is quite a lot, yeah. It was bouncing around within each place or area that we lived, but also moving continents and back again. And
so you're born in South Africa. Your mother's South African, your father's English.
Born in London.
But then grew up in South Africa.
My mother is from Cape Town, and we moved to South Africa, to Stellenbosch, to live on a wine farm, which is called Delaire, which a lot of people know now because it's been bought by Lawrence Graff of the Diamond Dynasty.
Oh, okay.
And he has kind of turbocharged it into this pretty extraordinary wine farm. When we lived there, it was a humble little farm with the most extraordinary views. And my mum got a job to become the managing director, having been a sort of housewife, basically, in Wimbledon, just kind of fancied a change, and through an old friend got this opportunity. And the whole package just provided us all with a completely different life. So as two young girls, we moved there, my sister and I, my mum. My dad continued to commute to Barnes in, as a solicitor.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was completely crazy. So we had three and a bit very happy years in Stellenbosch, and then we came back to the UK, moved to the southwest, Devon, and we lived there for about 10 years in different places, and then my parents moved to Portugal when I was about 20. So yeah, just so many different experiences, lots of different schools, different people, and it was that ritual of being in a new home, unpacking the few boxes of my own possessions and rearranging my little few pieces of furniture, but also watching my parents reassemble our stuff in a new setting, and the transformation over what is really only kind of 3 or 4 days of somewhere feeling scary and new and unfamiliar to feeling like home almost overnight. Obviously, home is so much about the people that you share that space with, but I feel like the belongings and the things and the stuff of life carry so much weight and power. It just started to really interest me. And I think it was all of that moving around and just being more cognizant probably than a kid normally might be of things and houses and buildings and where you are and how you feel just kind of started to intrigue me.
And I was just flicking through your new book, beautiful new book, Home, Art, Soul, which has got 12, is it 12?
Yeah.
Unseen interiors. And, you know, what strikes you is the difference. I mean, they are all so individual, but each one very adventurous in its own way and a lot of warm, rich colour, which, you know, you say, you know, Cape Town. I mean, that it's those the muds and the sunshine and that kind of African feeling comes out of it, the kind of warmth.
Mm.
Do you think that's sort of inside you, all those colours?
Absolutely. I mention it in my introduction to the book, of this feeling, which is a real sort of Southern Hemisphere feeling. And we've now got Australian clients, for example, and they know exactly what I'm talking about, which is just this urge to like fling the windows open and let the air in and see the sky and feel connected to outside. My worst nightmare is to be in small, low-ceilinged rooms with tiny windows. I feel like a romantic cottage is such a glorious notion, especially for a few nights, but I couldn't cope in in that kind of architecture because I would just feel hemmed in. And I feel that's what I'm looking for in every room that we design, is this kind of freshness and openness, and then that space is punctuated by richness of material and natural materials and pattern and colour within a fresh feeling space.
I love the way you say there can never be enough projects in a lifetime to satisfy my overflowing stream of ideas. I can almost see these the thoughts springing out of your head. I mean, I know you have, so you have a team of about 15 here now.
We're actually now 26.
Oh my gosh.
Insane. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. It's crazy. I try not to think about it too much.
And is it, do you sort of sit in the middle and burst out with all these ideas, and is the team kind of part of editing it down, or how do you work together? Do you ever see every client?
I do. It's actually the opposite way around. The team are also bursting with ideas, and they pull loads of different ideas and suggestions together, and then I edit. And if I don't feel like the right idea is there, then I will start thinking about bringing the idea. But yeah, it's funny when I think there are some architects and designers that I really admire for their very considered precise aesthetic. If you take someone like John Porson or Zaha Hadid or David Chipperfield, for example, you know, their aesthetics are perfectly executed and defined with this very consistent thread that runs through their work. It's almost like a philosophical religious belief system. And I admire that, but I just don't have the patience or the willpower to be that discerning. I just like too many different things. And I think that's why our projects sometimes feel so different to the last. Number one, I'd feel so bored trying to stick in one lane. I feel like it's the challenge of something different and new and a different brief and project that gets me up every day. But I also just like too many. I like a lot of stuff. It's a bit like people. I like a lot of people. I'm not discerning enough to to be too restrictive. I just sort of see something appealing in a lot of places. And it's like weaving all those things together is a great joy.
And your clients, do they come from all sorts of backgrounds?
Yeah. Yeah, we're working all over the world now. We're working in Hong Kong and Canada and New York and LA. We've recently been working in San Francisco and Paris. So doing all sorts of things, working in Mallorca. I'd say that there are more similarities than you think these days with those clients and what the requests and the requirements are. There are certain things that unify us in terms of how we like to live, what's important to us. Can tell you that storage is the number one request from anyone, wherever they are, whoever they are. We all have the same challenges in our lives. How do you make something feel comfortable and cozy and welcoming and warm, but also refined and sophisticated? So yeah, that we are working with all sorts of different people, but I think with social media and the press and this sort of global effect that's having, the challenge is that style and taste are being to some extent homogenized across the world, and everyone's idea of what is chic and beautiful and tasteful is slightly repetitive. And I think the challenge and the opportunity is to work out how to define that and think about where you are and who the client is and what the property is and the architecture and the heritage, but also bring them and their distinct personality out of them, blend it with mine basically, and try to create something that feels localized to some extent, so that you don't look at an interior of a room and think that could just be anywhere. I kind of want it to feel connected somehow. That's the difficulty that we're facing now.
And in between doing all these incredible projects and having babies and doing all the other things, you've also set up a charity called United in Design with Alexandra Dorley.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So in 2020, in the wake of the murder of George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement, myself and many others had a good look at themselves. And I realised that despite really wanting to run a diverse business, I just wasn't. And I kind of thought for the first time deeply about what barriers there were in making that so. Alex and I were connected and a friendship formed, and she had some amazing experiences herself with her daughter being given this opportunity through the Royal Ballet, through a scheme they have called A Chance to Dance, which creates opportunities and opens doors for people of colour and minority backgrounds to enter the world of ballet. And it was sort of that idea and that model where we just thought, what doors could we open and what should we be doing? And I made a list of 7 things in my business that I needed to just have a good look at, whether that was our recruitment policy, the language we were using in our job descriptions, through to diversity and inclusion training of myself and the team. And also thought about, like, we should be mentoring people. We should be thinking more carefully about work experience and who we give those opportunities to and internships. And then the sort of cherry on the cake became our apprenticeship scheme. So, sorry, I should say those ideas then turned into the framework with Alex of what United in Design was. And the idea is that we put businesses at the front of change and encourage our peers who run design studios or workshops, makers, lighting designers, garden designers. We get them to sign up and agree to take on 3 of the 7 pledges, and then the charity helps them to deliver on those, basically. So we're working with our whole industry here, in mainly in London for now, and we've got the most amazing brands and designers who are participating, including the magazines as well, like World of Interiors and House and Garden, etc. So it's really working, yeah.
And this year's Wow House, yes. You are their chosen charity.
Yes.
So Wow House, which is happening at the beginning of June at Design Centre Chelsea Harbour, which is where they bring interior designers together. It's a bit like Kits Bay, isn't it?
Yes.
And did you do it? You did it last year.
No, I haven't done it before, yeah.
So you're doing it this year?
Yes, I'm doing it this year.
Which room are you doing?
I'm doing a living room.
And is that in collaboration with a brand?
No, it's on our own with United in Design.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be really exciting. And we've tried to really use our room to showcase the diverse talent that we love who are out there and make our room distinct in that way. And it's been a great partnership with Wow House for United in Design as well. I think it's going to be a brilliant exposure for us to many more people and peers in our industry. And it's a fascinating thing, this Wow House, to experience. I think it's 19 or 20 different interior designers in a long sort of snaking tour. You just go from room to room and you're changing universe every time you walk through the door. It's really great.
It is very, very clever. Actually, it was Bernie de la Cogna, wasn't it, who had two?
Yes.
I think I met two of your students she'd worked with them to do one of the spaces last year.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was 2 years ago she worked with the two of our apprentices through the United in Design scheme to design her space, which was really great.
So tell us a little bit about what you do outside work. And do I understand you have a bit of a shopping habit?
Yes, for sure. I mean, being an interior designer is just a glorified shopper, basically. love clothes, love shopping. I love galleries. My husband and I are sort of sickeningly in step with how we like to spend our time on the weekends, and usually try and get to a gallery, go to the park for a walk with our kids, spend a lot of time in the playground.
And he's Charlie Casely Hayford, whose shop, his menswear shop is on Chilton Street, just next to Chilton Firehouse.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, he's a fashion designer.
Actually, I remember when I first went in there, you had, I don't know whether it's still there, but you had woven this beautiful, there was kind of, the banister had this amazing, it looked like a sort of tapestry, but when you got close, you said, oh, it was just bothering me. So I got some wool and wove a banister.
Yes. It was a family affair. We used scrap, like rag material to weave into the it's still there.
And then you have your brand sister, which is fabrics and furniture, which you also sell here at Blue Coat, which is a sort of by appointment. So how did that come about?
Yeah, so in COVID, and well, before COVID, we'd been looking for a new office studio space for about 2 years. I was trying to find the right kind of space. And then this building came up, and it was one of those moments where I thought, hold on, Mr. Estate Agent, you have not listened to me. I just specifically said, I want XYZ in Marylebone. And then I opened the photos and ate my words, because it's just so unique and special. But it's in Victoria, and it's a standalone building that was once a school. It's grade one listed, owned by the National Trust. So they're our landlord, built in 1709. And it's got 9 meter high ceilings, columns, windows on every side. It's just extraordinary and kind of beyond my wildest dreams of what I ever thought might be a place that we could be working in. So, and within it, it's got a showroom shop for Sister. So that's where, we sell all of our made to order rugs, furniture, fabrics, cushions, art. It's a lot of fun.
And I have to say, it's the dinkiest little jewel box. I mean, you literally come out of St. James's Park Station and And then you can't, it just, it kind of looks slightly incongruous sitting yeah. amongst all these, you know, prêt-à-manger and high buildings.
Skyscrapers,
it's just
yeah.
beautiful.
Yeah, it's so special. And it's really just been so uplifting for the team, especially in a post-pandemic world, coming back to work and everyone really enjoys coming here. It kind of blows clients' socks off a bit, and it's just a really inspiring, uplifting space.
And you do, you have a sister.
I do.
So tell us about her.
Rose, my younger sister. Yeah, she's the muse, and the reason sister is called sister, because I adore her, and she is so much fun and so light-hearted and free-spirited. I just wanted to kind of capture the essence of her in what it was all about, sister, because, yeah, Studio Ashby is, to me anyway, quite heavyweight now in terms of staff and responsibility and the projects that we're doing. It's hugely enjoyable, but it's occasionally quite serious and occasionally stressful. And sister was really born as this outlet to just do what I wanted to do and be more experimental and playful. So yeah, Rose was the muse, which she loves. And she has been the head chef of Spring for the last 10 years, which is a wonderful restaurant owned by Sky Gingell in Somerset House. But she's recently moved post-maternity leave into more of a director of special projects role between Spring and Heckfield. So she's doing other things now, but she's...
Nice. And does she have interior design skills? Do you have cooking skills?
No. No, we joke that together we'd be like the perfect wife, but separately not so much. No, I can't really cook, and I'm completely disinterested in it. I like laying the table. And Rose just leans on me very heavily for all of her interior design dilemmas, which is fair enough.
Perfect. Yeah. Why not? Why do you think that, I mean, there is such a spirit of wonderful adventure in your interiors, but why do you think that we're so afraid of doing things that we think we might get bored of in our homes?
Yeah, I think it's a real worry of that, of people's. And I feel like it holds people back from making decisions, and also then maybe sometimes making a more boring decision. I feel, and it's maybe easy for me to say, that things can be changed and moved and updated and repainted and reinterpreted. So nothing, also maybe having moved a lot, the permanence of stuff and things doesn't feel like such a burden to me. I feel like everything is more dynamic than that. But yeah, I always encourage people to be bolder and stronger, because I think those decisions, if you love them, can just bring so much joy to your life. You know, the really strong, incredible artwork. I think artworks have the power to kind of reach out and move you and make you feel something. And that's so much more interesting to me as an experience than something that feels quite bland. So, yeah.
And when you're sourcing for clients, do you have a quota for antiques or upcycled furniture, or compared to what you're buying bespoke? Or is that, do you try and get a bit of a blend in? I'm thinking about the kind of sustainability and buying pre-loved. Is that a big part of Studio Ashby?
It is a big part of it. And I mean, I just love antique and vintage furniture so much. And you can find pieces with so much attitude and personality and strength. You can also find things for a fraction of the price than it would be to make something at all similar. You know, an Italian high gloss sideboard with a marquetry inlay to the front and a little brass key and lock and back painted glass top, all of those different materials and elements coming together, you can pick something like that up for, I don't know, £2,000 or £3,000. Whereas if you were to try and make that again, it would be £12,000, because it's just so much more expensive now to have things made. So I think there's huge value in it. And the strength that you get from those designs, particularly for me, mid-century modern, the Italian and French variety, and Scandinavian design as well. I adore it. So yeah, a huge portion, probably a third of our projects is vintage, but every client's different. And some people don't want as much as that, and some people want more. But it's a big part of our sourcing
And do you do that online or do you do trips? Do you head off to Europe and go and scour the markets?
We do a lot of it online. We've recently done a couple of projects in Paris and that was a total joy to go and spend some time in those markets. And there's nothing better than the thrill of doing that. I it's probably one of my top three favourite types of days out. Especially if it's finished off with like steak frites and a glass of wine outside on the terrace, it's just too perfect.
Exactly.
So no, we do a bit about going out and about, but a lot of it is now easy to do online as well.
Do you travel back to South Africa? Have you taken the children there?
Yes, go back quite a lot. We actually went twice last year for two different holidays. It calls me. I just love it so much. It's my happy place and I want my children to know it as well, and got some really good friends there. So it just, yeah, just lifts me up. The landscape and the climate and that sense of space and the sky and the mountains and the sea, it just really does a lot for me. So I kind of, it's almost like a drug. Got to keep going back. So I'm sure I'll be back this year.
And do you have any idea what you would be doing if you hadn't become an interior designer?
Good question. Not really. I feel like I could be curious about doing a lot of different things. Probably always something to do with property. I like the idea of maybe a developer. Or I suppose that's an extension of what I'm already doing. But something to do with real estate, I think. I just love buildings so much. I don't think I'd have the patience or the stamina to be an architect. And it just takes such a long time as an architect to not only train, but then execute a project of any complexity. It's years and years, which is the case for interior design a lot of the time as well, but it is a bit quicker. So yeah, I mean, sometimes I think I could have just been a florist. I love arranging flowers, or a shopkeeper, but I suppose I am a bit of a shopkeeper now.
Well, thank you, Sophie. It's been so lovely. I feel like I've known you quite a long time, but just to see the journey that you've been on is actually quite extraordinary. Do you kind of have to pinch yourself a little bit sometimes?
I do, and I think it's really important to pinch yourself and like take note. And we recently turned 10 as a studio, and we had several parties and dinners to mark the occasion, because it just felt and still feels like a real achievement. It's hard running a business. And we've been through the ringer in the last 10 years with various things going on externally. So I'm just so grateful to my team and Fiona, who I run the business with, and Nicola, who all work so hard. It's a great pleasure to be an interior designer. I feel very lucky.
Well, thank you very, very much indeed for your time, because I know you're super busy. And the book is out now. It's by Rizzoli. And you can get it on Amazon.
You can, or you can buy a signed special edition copy from us.
Well, there you go. On your website, on Studio
Ashby. On our website, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Sophie. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Really nice to talk.
Thank you for joining me today. You can hear more House Guest on British Airways In-Flight Entertainment in the audio section. You can follow me on Instagram at Carol W. Annett.